Welcome to Journal Club. I'm Malcolm Diggs. In the immortal words of Frankenstein's monster, fire bad. And unfortunately, we often don't spot fires until they're really bad. We'll miss the small brush fires and only take notice when they're large and out of control. This happens for a few reasons. One, fires can start anywhere, even away from the cities, in the middle of open land or in a forest where nobody would notice. Two, if someone does notice, there can be a bystander effect. Everyone thinks that someone else must have called 911 to report the fire, or that someone else must already be handling it. So nobody ends up calling at all, and the fire grows and grows. Where I live, in California, this is a big problem. Large parts of the state are sparsely populated open areas with lots of fuel for wildfires, dry grass, and the like. So every summer, a sad ritual repeats itself here. Loose cigarette butts, or mismanaged campfires, or downed power lines, or any of several other causes could be the trigger. And once fire starts, it goes unspotted for a while. It grows, it spreads, and eventually causes real damage. These fires cost California billions of dollars every single year. There are a number of ways that we can all change our behavior to help lower the risk of wildfires, but prevention only goes so far. We can expect that regardless of anything we personally do, the macro trend for the prevalence of fires is pointing up. Nothing short of actually addressing the climate crisis will change that. But short of that, short of actual prevention, is there a way that we can at least get better at detection? The authors of today's study say yes. They argue that if you equip drones with cameras, onboard computers, and lightweight computer vision models, then those drones can spot fires just after they occur, but before they start to spread. If successful, this would have two key benefits. One, early detection of fires that haven't been noticed by anybody. And two, reliable reporting of fires that other people have seen but failed to report. Let's see what they built and how they built it. They started by downloading two repositories full of fire images. One repository from UC Irvine, and the other from Mendeley Data. These included photos of many different types of fires: forest, vehicle, industrial, residential, etc. They also added in extra images of fires taken from a drone view, overhead, to make sure the image set captured many different types of angles. They ended up with about 6,000 images, equally divided between scenes that showed fire and scenes that didn't show fire. To be useful for supervised learning, the images needed to be pre-processed a bit. Labels were added to indicate if the scene contained fire or not. Bounding boxes, or segmentation masks, were added to highlight the region of interest, the region of the photo depicting the flames and the smoke. All images were resized to a standard set of dimensions, and some of the images were put through augmentation techniques to increase the overall size of the training set. So these techniques included flipping, saturating or desaturating a photo, or adding random noise to the photo. After all that, they now had a training set twice the size it was before. 7,600 images of fire and 5,800 images without fire. They segmented the total set, so all 13,000 plus images, into three partitions. One, the training set. That would be 80% of the images. This would be the actual training data fed into their computer vision model. Two, the validation set. That would be 10% of the images. This would be the data used to tune the hyperparameters after training to prevent overfitting. And three, the test set, that's the remaining 10%. This would be the final set used to evaluate the performance of the finished model after training, after tuning. When it came to model training, they faced a dilemma. In order to get the best results, they wanted to train the largest, most complex model they could, in their case, a YOLO V8M, a medium, with 25 million parameters. But this model would be large and power hungry, not necessarily a great choice for something that needs to run on board a drone. So they decided to train that model, tune it, test it, and then distill it down to a much smaller one, a YOLO V8N, a nano with only 3 million parameters. For training, they use a platform called Detectron 2, and for distillation, they used a tool called AutoDistill. They also trained a DETR, a detection transformer model, just to have something to compare to their YOLO models. Then came the fun part. It was time to load the smaller model, the Nano, onto an actual drone. They used a DJI F450 with a remote controller, a GPS module, a radio module, and a few other add-ons. they loaded their model onto a Raspberry Pi, strapped the Pi to the drone, and added a Pi camera module, which has a 12 megapixel Sony sensor with HDR support. Then, and here's the wild part, they set a bunch of fires. The authors had come to the decision that they didn't just want to validate their model in an academic sense. They didn't just want to validate it in the lab. They wanted to validate the entire system end-to-end in the field. The point of their project was to build a drone that could identify fires, not theoretically, but literally. So they set up a literal test of those abilities. The authors went out into the middle of an open plot of land. You can see photos of this if you download the paper. And then they just started setting stuff on fire. It looks like small bushes, wood, or the like, but it's difficult to tell what they were setting on fire, but it was something. Then they sent the drone up in the air and had it fly around trying to detect the fires that they set. Here's how the drone did. They flew 43 times with fires burning. The drone caught the fires 38 times and missed them 5 times. They flew 22 times without fires burning. The drone false alarmed twice, but the other 20 times it flew around without false alarming. So in total, the accuracy in the field was about 89%. Back in the lab, the theoretical accuracy compared to the test set had been around 95%, so these field experiments roughly fell in line with the rest of the data. Given those results, I would say their experiment was a success. According to the authors, they believe this is the, quote, first time that a knowledge distillation-based AI technique has been integrated with a drone and a Raspberry Pi 5 edge device for instantaneous fire detection work, end quote. That being said, there is some distance between their current prototype and a real usable product that could be deployed in the field. This is largely due to battery consumption issues. Despite running a distilled version of the model, the Raspberry Pi was still very power hungry, as was the drone itself, and as was the onboard camera, which was running at 8 frames per second. As a result, the drone's flight only lasted 10 minutes each, and the authors believe the flight time would max out around 12 minutes. Traveling at 15 meters per second, the drone would only be able to travel a few miles out and back before running out of power. So at present, this setup isn't a practical mode of fire surveillance for large areas. But I wouldn't be surprised if future research addresses this issue. If this project continues to grow and evolve, one day the authors may be successful at creating the equivalent of a fire alarm for open areas. In cities, it's not uncommon for large buildings like apartment complexes to have fire alarms that automatically alert 911 when a fire is detected. This is how they overcome the bystander effect and other impediments to fire reporting. A sufficiently large fleet of these drones could bring an equivalent benefit to open areas. Immediate detection of fires, and the automatic alerting of 911. Who knows? One day maybe the drones could even start autonomously spraying down the fires while they're waiting for the firefighters to arrive. If you'd like to see the images that accompanied this study, and you should, or if you want to take a look at their drone schematics or their training data set, then I'd encourage you to download the paper. It's certainly one of the most visually interesting papers I've read, and I'm pretty sure this is the first time I've ever said the words, "And then the researchers started setting stuff on fire." First time for everything. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Journal Club. I hope you enjoyed it. Malcolm Diggs signing off. See you tomorrow.